Subcommittee on Courts, the Internet, and Intellectual Property will come to order. Thank you all for your interest and for your presence and being here. We will open with opening statements and then proceed directly to hear from our witnesses today as well. Now, recognize myself. Today's hearing is an oversight hearing on the Copyright Office report on orphan works. The orphan works issue arises when someone who wants to use a copyrighted work cannot find the owner, no matter how diligently they search. The owner may have moved several times, died, or in the case of corporate owners, may have changed names or been bought out. This leaves the potential user with no options, even though they want to do the right thing by paying a reasonable royalty to the copyright owner of a photograph, book, or other work. Responding to this issue, the Copyright Office has released suggested statutory language that they believe will address the orphan works issue in a balanced manner. I have heard from a number of interested parties on the orphan works issue, and the language suggested by the Copyright Office, from potential owners and users of orphan works to others who are merely concerned about the impact of any new orphan works legislation on existing statutes. I have long been a proponent of strong copyright protections, so I look forward to hearing from the witnesses today who are seeking to address the orphan works issue by limiting the remedies for specific uses of orphan works. It is important that copyright owners still receive a fair royalty under an effective system if the owner does reappear to claim ownership of his work. Some copyright owners, such as photographers, illustrators, and artists, have unique business issues that are different from those of other copyright owners. I look forward to hearing of their specific concerns and whether or not the suggested language has adequately addressed them or can be modified to do so in either statutory or report language. Numerous interested parties have been meeting among themselves to develop modifications to the Copyright Office language in order to better protect their interest. The successful completion of such negotiations will enable us to move an orphan works bill in the coming weeks. Moving a bill in Congress does not require unanimity. Parties who feel that they can simply stop the legislative process by failing to negotiate in good faith or at all tend to be ignored, maybe I should say left behind. I look forward to working with other members of the committee and interested parties to advance a near-consensus bill on the issue at hand. That concludes my testimony. The gentleman from California, Mr. Berman, is recognized for his.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for scheduling the hearing on the Copyright Office's report on orphan works. Fortunately for you and the other members, I'm going to have to leave a little early because of another hearing in a different committee. So I would like to use the opening statement to raise some questions. But I want to start out by commending the Copyright Office on their legislative proposal. It's united a number of owner and user groups in search of a solution to the orphan works problem. The recommendation goes a long way to meeting users' concerns of making beneficial uses of works when copyright owners can't be found. This allows our society to be enriched by access to works that otherwise and most likely would be lost. All this must coexist against the backdrop of continuing to maintain the incentive for creators to pursue their art. So when it comes specifically to the category of owners of visual arts works such as photographers and illustrators, which seems to be a group that is most concerned about this proposal, I want to raise some questions about the effect of the Copyright Office proposal on an orphan works provision. Currently, a user can begin a search by typing in search terms in a registry, be it in the Copyright Office or for musical works by contacting BMI or ASCAP. There is no collective registry, however, for photographic or illustration information, which makes owner information in many instances almost impossible to find. According to this proposal, if a reasonable search and attribution allows one to qualify for a limitation on remedies, will most owners of photographs be required to forego their normal remedies when the information can't be found? That issue is, to me, the large elephant remaining in the room. Is the current copyright system layered by the orphan works provision adequate to protect visual arts owners. The most basic question seems unanswerable. Where does one even begin the process of finding the owner information for most illustrations or photographs? No doubt this question may be addressed in part by some non-legislative solutions, or possibly legislative in that an appropriation is required. For example, when I wrote to the Copyright Office about the Orphan Works issue, I requested that they explore the viability of creating an accurate, updated, and electronically searchable database of copyright ownership. How much would such a database cost? Currently, on the Copyright Office's search file, unless one has a registration number, the title, or the author name, one can't search for the work. Even with all that information, the search feature is extremely rudimentary. With photographs, however, where oftentimes there is no title to the work, there is currently no mechanism to search a description of the work, and the possibility of matching the work is limited since there is no thumbnail of the photograph. Granted, part of the problem has been exacerbated by attempts to accommodate the needs of the photographers by allowing group registration. However, if the Orphan Works provision limits an owner's right to reasonable compensation without access to statutory damages or attorney's fees, what's the motivation for photographers to register their works in the first place, which gives them an opportunity to get those remedies? While some have stated that this issue should be resolved outside the scope of this Orphan Works solution, I think we have to be somewhat wary of going down a road that small copyright owners claim will isolate them from the benefits of the copyright system and potentially harm them. Currently, copyright owners can use the threat of litigation with the possibility of statutory damages and attorney's fees to hinder unauthorized uses of their works. Under this Orphan Works provision, while the use is still considered infringement, the remedies are so limited that likelihood of recovery of even reasonable compensation becomes questionable. The cost of litigation to determine reasonable compensation would oftentimes far exceed the actual reasonable compensation. To discuss the Orphan Works recommendation without addressing a core problem for major stakeholders in the process alters the balance in maintaining the exclusive rights for locatable copyright owners. Where but for the fact that there is no adequate database, some of these children could be matched with their parents. So the issues I just wanted to raise, I know I'm taking a little longer, but I'll make up for it on the other end. Right. I would hope some of the witnesses could address a few of these questions. For cases in which the Copyright Office has a registration for a work with locatable information on its face, should there be an exception or carve-out to the Orphan Works provision? Should an owner, if able to show a registration, be able to reclaim his right to statutory damages or attorney's fees? What if the work was not only registered, but the owner took steps to make his work locatable by providing a description of the work? Would this make a difference? If the Copyright Office is proposing that this database be a voluntary database established by the photographers, should we look at a larger, later enactment date to allow time for the photographers to acclimate to this new scheme, or perhaps provide a transition period? Finally, would the witnesses be amenable to having the option of a resolution of the Orphan Works issue in a small claims court to reduce the cost to small copyright owners? There are some other issues to consider, but it's in this particular area that I would hope that the witnesses might address this discrete problem that I see in the proposal, which I generally commend and appreciate the Copyright Office submitting to us in response to our request. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Berman. The gentleman from California, Ms. Loughran, is recognized for an opening statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd ask unanimous consent to put my full statement in the record.
With that objection, so ordered.
To save time, I'd just like to mention how interested I am in the Copyright Office proposal. I think that, as you know, I introduced a bill, H.R. 2408, that took a somewhat different approach than the one proposed by the Copyright Office. In my bill, I set forward a concept of a national registry system to avoid their works becoming orphaned. Under my bill, copyright holders would register their works in a national registry after 50 years. I recently received a letter from Professor Lawrence Lessig of Stanford Law School in support of a registry system. I'd like to make that a part of the record. It's not my proposal, But I am interested in what the witnesses might think. I think it's been on the web.
With that objection, that proposal will be made a part of the record, as well as any other items that the gentlewoman wants to enter in as a part of her opening statement.
I would just like to note that I had one of the values I'd hoped for in a registration approach is certainty on the part of all parties. On the other hand, the copyrights proposal has some benefits because it doesn't have the arbitrary 50-year date, and I think there's value in that. On the other hand, I'm not sure the certainty principle is there. And so I'm interested in all of the witnesses talking about what further efforts could be made to provide certainty. I mean, certainly if you expend money, time, and effort on an orphan work, you want to have some level of certainty that you're doing so on firm ground. I'm not sure that the proposal before us really gives that level of certainty, and perhaps there is some way to do that absent a registry system, or maybe that is the better system. So thank you, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me. I don't generally do opening statements, but I appreciate the opportunity to do so today.
Thank you, Ms. Laughlin. The gentleman from California, Mr. Issa, recognized for an opening statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'll put my written statement into the record to save time. And I just want to compliment and echo Mr. Berman's comments by saying that if I can find what is unfindable on the government site by going to Google, then in fact we're not living up to the expectations of the public. And I would hope that as we go through this legislation or proposal and in the future, that we recognize that in a digital age there should be nothing unsearchable, including, to be honest, a digital image from a picture being matched with the entire database of pictures. That technology exists today, and I would hope during the statements we could discuss, if not today, then when would we have those capabilities so that there would not be a true orphan of intellectual property, copyright property, particularly in the government's hands. Thank you. I yield back.
Thank you, Mr. Issa. Would our panelists stand so that you all can be sworn in? If you would raise your right hand, you swear that the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. Please be seated. Our first witness is Jules Sigel, the Associate Registrar for Policy and International Affairs at the U.S. Copyright Office. Mr. Sigel is the head of the Office of Policy and International Affairs, which assists the Register of Copyrights in advising Congress and executive branch agencies on domestic and international copyright policy matters. Mr. Sigel is also an adjunct professor of law at the George Washington University Law School, where he teaches copyright. Mr. Sigel is a graduate of Duke University and a summa cum laude graduate of the Catholic University School of Law. Our next witness is Alan Adler, Vice President for Legal and Governmental Affairs for the Association of American Publishers, which represents book and journal publishing industries. He deals with intellectual property, freedom of speech, new technology, and other industry-related issues. Mr. Adler holds a BA in history from the State University of New York at Binghamton and a JD from the George Washington University Law School. Our next witness is David Trust, the Chief Executive Officer of the Professional Photographers of America. Founded in 1880, the PPA is the world's largest nonprofit trade association for professional photographers with 15,000 members. Mr. Trust is also the CEO of the Alliance of Visual Artists. The AVA is an umbrella group representing the interests of photographic organizations, which also represents the International Association of Professional Event Photographers, Commercial Photographers International, and the Student Photographic Society as well. Mr. Trust graduated with a BS in journalism from the University of Georgia. Our final witness is Maria Palonte, the Associate General Counsel and Director of Licensing at the Solomon R. Guggenheim Foundation, where she has managed intellectual property and related business affairs since 1999. Ms. Palonte received her JD from the George Washington University Law School and her BA from College Misericordia. In closing, we should note, Mr. Trust, that you are at a slight disadvantage today since you are the only one with no connection to George Washington University School of Law. I don't know this, we've never come this close, I think, before to a clean sweep by one law school with three having graduated from one. But you may be outnumbered, but not out what? Testimonied? We'll find out. Okay. Mr. Sigel, we'll begin with you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chairman Smith, Mr. Berman, and members of the subcommittee. I am pleased to appear today on behalf of the Copyright Office to testify about our report on orphan works. We would like to thank Chairman Smith and Mr. Berman for supporting our study in the report, which we published at the end of January. As you summarized, Mr. Chairman, the term orphan works describes the situation where someone would like to use a copyrighted work but cannot identify and locate the copyright owner. Even where the user makes a diligent effort to find the owner, if the owner is not found, the user faces a dilemma. She cannot determine whether the owner would permit the use. Where the proposed use is infringing, the user cannot reduce the risk of copyright liability because there is always the possibility that a copyright owner could bring an infringement action after that use has begun. In this situation, a productive and beneficial of the use may be forestalled, not because the owner has asserted exclusive rights or because the user and owner cannot agree to on the terms of a license, but merely because the user cannot locate the owner. For many users, the risk of infringement and liability, even though remote, is enough to prompt them not to make use of the work. This outcome is not in the public interest, especially where the owner no longer exists or otherwise does not care to restrain the use of the work. Based on our study of this issue, we concluded the following. The orphan works problem is real, but it is elusive to quantify and describe comprehensively. Some orphan works situations may be addressed by existing law, but many are not. And legislation is necessary to provide a meaningful solution to the orphan works problem as we know it today. The report recommends, with specific legislative language, an amendment to the Copyright Act's remedies section. Our proposal is motivated by two primary goals. First, any system to deal with orphan works should seek to make it more likely a user finds the relevant owner in the first instance and negotiates a voluntary agreement over the use of the work. Second, where the user cannot identify and locate the owner after a reasonably diligent search, then the system should permit that user to make use of the work, subject to provisions that resolve issues that arise if the owner surfaces after the use has commenced. Our proposed amendment follows the core concept that many participants favored as an orphan works solution. If the user has performed a reasonably diligent search but does not locate that copyright owner, then the remedies for infringement by that user should be limited. Both our written testimony and the report go into the specifics of our recommendation, so I will not spend much time on those details now. I would like to focus my remarks today on the reactions that interested parties have given to our report. By and large, that reaction has been quite positive. A diverse array of copyright owners and users, book publishers, authors, libraries, archives, museums, motion picture studios, record companies, educational institutions, documentary filmmakers, and others, all agree with our conclusion that the orphan works issue is real and needs to be addressed, and they agree with the basic concept and structure of our proposed legislation. Some of these groups have made constructive suggestions for changes to the specific provisions, and we are confident that further discussion among the interested parties can resolve any remaining issues. Certain groups representing individual copyright owners, however, such as photographers, illustrators, and graphic artists, oppose our proposal. They argue that many of their works will be inaccurately labeled orphan works because it is often difficult to find the owner of a visual image, usually because the name of the creator is not on copies of the work. As Mr. Berman pointed out, the Copyright Office records are text-based and in many cases do not contain much, if any, description of the subject matter of the image, in part because we have eased the registration requirements for photographers at their request. So even if a photographer has registered his works, a user may not be able to locate that owner. In other words, these groups concede the very problem at the heart of the report. A user seeking to locate a photographer of an image that has no identifying information on it faces a daunting challenge. Our proposal provides safeguards for this problem in a number of ways. First, in most cases, including all commercial uses, the user of an orphan work must pay the copyright owner reasonable compensation if the owner resurfaces. Also, the user will not be able to continue making the use after the owner asserts his copyright, except in defined circumstances, and even in that case must pay reasonable compensation for that future use. So when critics say that our proposal would strip thousands of photographers and other visual artists of their rights, that is simply not true. Photographers claim that bringing a lawsuit to collect reasonable compensation will be prohibitively expensive. We agree that legal actions to enforce copyright are expensive, just as any access to our court system is costly. However, this problem exists for visual images today, regardless of whether orphan works legislation is passed or not. Moreover, there are non-legal actions that photographers and others can take to protect their copyrights. These steps include consistently marking copies of their works, development of collective licensing mechanisms, and deploying technology to allow effective searches where the user only has the image and no contextual information for the work. Steps like these will also ensure that visual images are locatable and that their works do not become orphan works. Regarding the expense of litigation, We noted in the report that a new small claims procedure might also help individual owners protect their copyright generally, and also allow them to obtain reasonable compensation if their work falls into the orphan category. We would be pleased to work with the subcommittee and interested parties in exploring possible new procedures. However, the key to enhancing copyright protection in visual images is not increased litigation, but making it easier for owners and users to find each other, which our orphan work proposal encourages. In conclusion, many users, especially cultural institutions like libraries, museums, and archives, made clear that any orphan work solution must include photographs and other visual images, given the persistent orphan works problems that exist with these works. In fact, orphan works legislation may be the catalyst needed to prompt the non-legal marketplace reforms that will most efficiently address the problems identified by these creators. For this reason and others, Congress should not delay its consideration and enactment of orphan works legislation. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and I look forward to answering any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Siegel. Mr. Adler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Berman, Ms. Lofka. As both users and producers of copyrighted works, book publishers have considerable experience with the frustration caused by the orphan works problem in seeing necessary permissions to incorporate photos, illustrations, and other discrete third-party copyrighted works into the histories, biographies, and other kinds of literary works they publish. AAP was gratified to learn that the Copyright Office report recommended the same basic framework that the book publishing community has proposed, and we've been hopeful of reaching a consensus since learning that representatives of the library, higher education, museum, and scholarly society communities had endorsed an initiative that was strikingly similar to the AAP proposal in almost all key respects. In general, we think the Copyright Office did an excellent job in its report, wisely rejecting a variety of orphan work proposals that seemed excessively complex, discriminatory, costly, or bureaucratic, in favor of advocating a relatively straightforward, flexible, and self-executing scheme. By its terms, the Copyright Office proposal may be viewed as a fine-tuning of statutory law because it would not impose any new prerequisites for registration or enforcement of copyright or in any way affect the duration of copyright, the scope of copyright liability, or the applicability of fair use or other defenses against infringement. However, AAP, like other orphan work stakeholders, does have some concerns about the Copyright Office's draft statutory language to implement its recommendations. With respect to the important issue of the conduct of a reasonably diligent search, AAP generally agrees with the Copyright Office approach, and we think that the Copyright Office has provided helpful explanations and examples in its report, which should be included in legislative history to inform how the analysis and factors will be employed in determining whether a particular search satisfies the statutory standard. But we have some questions regarding when it should be appropriate for an orphan work user to qualify for the statutory limitation on remedies in reliance on the results of a previous third-party search rather than the user's own reasonably diligent search. And we think that we need further detail in the statutory language and explanations in legislative history on three sets of issues. First, clarifying that a reasonably diligent search conducted by a user's employees acting within the scope of their employment or by a third party acting in an agency capacity on behalf of the user should qualify the user for the statutory limitation on remedies in the same way as would a search conducted by the user. Second, we want to clarify that any person who engages in a related infringing use of the same work as the user who conducted a reasonably diligent search should qualify for the statutory limitations on remedies based on the user's search without conducting their own reasonably diligent search, at least where the related infringing use occurs pursuant to a license from the user or the user's licensee. The example in our industry would be if an author has conducted the reasonably diligent search, we would hope that the publisher, the printer, the licensee who is authorized to do paperback versions of the book would not all have to do their own separate reasonably diligent searches in order to rely on the limitation of remedies. Third, there's the important other situation of so-called piggybacking on a previously conducted search, but in those instances, there will be a second user of the work who is not tied in any way to the original user by a license or other basis for asserting a claim of legal privity, and the use of the work by the second user will be different from and unrelated to the use of the work by the original user. Our concern there is that if the standard is simply one of reasonableness under the circumstances, that may lead second users to do nothing other than determine whether a previous reasonably diligent search has been conducted by another user. in which case they would perpetuate a mistaken notion that orphan works is a designation which adheres to the work in question and creates a status for the work that governs all of its future uses by any users. This would be contrary to the more accurate and appropriate view that orphan works designation actually applies to the work only in connection with a particular use by particular users or users. The attribution requirement that the Copyright Office would also require in order for the user to be able to rely upon the statutory limitation of remedies is somewhat troubling. The attribution requirement, predictably in these kinds of cases, if we're trying to identify the author and the copyright owner, will be not terribly reliable. And in those circumstances, we are concerned that requiring attribution as a condition for obtaining the limitation on remedies is likely to mean that an emerging copyright owner will sue and basically attack the attribution to make the individual user not subject to the limitation on remedies. So we would hope that this could be clarified. There are other respects in which we would hope to be able to clarify the plan proposed by the Copyright Office. We would hope most of that can be done through examples and illustrations contained in legislative history while retaining a fairly simple statutory framework for orphan works treatment.
Thank you, Mr. Adler. Mr. Trest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and Ranking Member Berman and members of the committee, we thank you for the opportunity to testify concerning the Copyright's report on orphan works. As you mentioned, I'm here representing Professional Photographers of America. We have received endorsement or support from the American Society of Media Photographers, our good friends there, the Picture Archive Council of America, and the American Society of Picture Professionals, who have each contacted us separately to endorse the statement that we are about to make. The 130,000 professional photographers in the United States are quite literally the copyright owner next door, earning on average less than $35,000 a year. They are middle-class American entrepreneurs found in every congressional district. While they are among the smallest copyright-owning businesses, photographers can easily create more than 20,000 works a year, each one having a relatively modest dollar value. They are the group most likely to have their works fall into the orphan category. Now, some would have you believe that all orphan works are willfully abandoned, that photographers don't value those works. It indicates a lack of understanding about the photographic industry. The truth is that an artist who marks his work and takes every reasonable step to make herself known can still have her images labeled as orphaned. In the commercial context, this occurs with alarming frequency when editorial or advertising images are not properly credited or have meta tags removed before publication to the internet. For the retail photographer, the threat comes from both unauthorized copies that do not contain attribution, as well as from clients who make the photographer's contact information inaccessible by doing perfectly innocent things like gluing images into albums. Quite contrary to the Copyright Office's statement, 90% of our members mark their work. They are available. Now, because of their position in the marketplace and the ease with which their work falls into orphan status, a change in the law that might only cause a ripple for a large corporation is enough to capsize the earning power of photographers and other visual artists. Unfortunately, it's our feeling that the Copyright Office proposal on orphan works, while well-intended, effectively tosses independent visual artists over the side of the copyright boat. It attempts to correct a bad situation by creating another bad situation. Of particular concern with the proposal is the limitation on, and in some cases, the elimination of, monetary damages. The denial of any monetary relief if the infringer's use of the orphan work was not for commercial advantage, and if the infringer stops the use when notified by the rightful owner. The proposal fails to recognize that for the vast majority of professional photographers, non-commercial, personal use copying undermines the entire market for their work. In addition, most photography infringements have long been completed by the time they're discovered, so requiring that an infringer cease the infringement is at best meaningless. If enacted, this provision would create the perverse result of a copyright owner proving infringement but receiving no monetary award at all, no compensation, no legal fees, no costs, no reasonable royalty, just a congratulatory handshake and a bill from her attorney. We find this to be patently unfair. Now, we do understand that this elimination of damages for certain orphan infringements was included to address the concerns of nonprofit museums, libraries, and archives. We want to be part of finding a solution. However, we implore the committee to use a scalpel rather than a chainsaw when carving out an exemption for such uses. The standard in the proposal is simply too broad. Even in cases where a reasonable royalty is called for, the Copyright Office proposal would not work in the real world. For almost all visual artists, an orphan works infringement will never generate enough in damages to make a suit economically viable or even to make the threat of such a lawsuit credible. There is no incentive for individuals of ill will not to claim every work is an orphan work. Some creators have suggested making attorney fees available in order to solve this problem. While we believe this to be a reasonable solution, our friends in the user community don't. This apparent impasse points to a larger problem. The fact is, individual copyright owners, whether of regular or orphan works, find it economically impossible to gain any sort of meaningful relief through the courts. Without access to statutory damages and attorney fees, enforcing rights in federal district court simply is not a real option. In order to solve the damages issue for orphan works and to provide relief for individual copyright owners, we propose the creation of an optional administrative proceeding to decide low-value copyright cases, a small claims-type procedure. Elements of our proposal were included in our response to the Copyright Office's notice of inquiry, and we've included proposed statutory language in our written testimony as well. We believe that orphan works and the accessibility of damages are inseparably linked. How could they not be? Without a mechanism for encouraging payment by infringers, the orphan works proposal is simply a way to skirt a creator's rights. Concluding, we are eager to see the problem of orphan work solved. We recognize that it is a problem. However, we must ensure that our legislative cure for the problem is free of side effects that will do irreparable harm to an entire class of copyright owner. We urge you to consider the devastating effect this legislation would have in its present form. Again, let us not try to solve a bad situation by creating another bad situation. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, again, we thank you for the opportunity to bring the problems of independent copyright owners to your attention.
Thank you, Mr. Trust. Ms. Palante.
Thank you, Chairman Smith, members of the subcommittee. I appreciate the invitation to be here today. I would like to state for the record that my testimony has been endorsed by 18 cultural and educational organizations, representing a combined 144,000 museums, libraries, universities, and archives, and more than 135,000 independent historians, educators, artists, and scholars who want to make productive use of orphan works. It is our view that an orphan works amendment has one ultimate goal. It should help to make cultural heritage more broadly available to the public. Therefore, it must give users the confidence necessary to take works out of obscurity. Scholars, museums, libraries, and universities struggle every day to balance the rights of lost copyright holders on the one hand with the mission of making letters, manuscripts, and photographs available for educational purposes on the other hand. At times, we are also custodians. That is, we have millions of orphan works in our institutional collections, and we care for these at our own expense to the ultimate benefit of the public. For us, the importance of an orphan work solution cannot be stressed enough. We would like to recognize the Copyright Office for its leadership on this topic over the past year. The report on orphan works is a tremendous contribution. On balance, we found it to be accurate, insightful, and comprehensive. In fact, we and the majority of parties who commented during the office proceedings completely agree with many of its findings. Such consensus is remarkable in an undertaking as innovative as an orphan works amendment. For example, we agree with others that actual and statutory damages should be unavailable to a copyright claimant in an orphan works context. We agree that with respect to searching for a copyright owner, the standards of due diligence must be general and flexible. We agree that in order to be meaningful, orphan works must include unpublished works and works of foreign origin. And we agree that there should be some additional protection available to those of us who use orphan works for non-commercial purposes. These are complex points, but in our view, the Copyright Office got them right. This said, we do have a few concerns with the proposed statutory language. I should note, however, that we have spoken with Jewel and the Copyright Office, as well as others in the copyright industry, including Allen and the publishers, and we are confident that these concerns can be addressed. First, we believe the statutory language should define reasonable compensation. We like and suggest the definition that's quoted in the report itself. We also believe there must be clear and thoughtful legislative history with detailed examples of compensation, including illustrations where the user is a nonprofit library, museum, archive, university, small publisher, or independent scholar, and the use is typically free. Second, to qualify for the safe harbor provision, the Copyright Office suggests that a use must be made, quote, without any purpose of direct or indirect commercial advantage, unquote. This phrase requires clarification. For example, as nonprofit institutions, we produce books in accordance with our educational missions, but we do sell them for the same reason we charge admissions to exhibitions, to cover the cost of production. We need confirmation that the creation and sale of mission-related publications are uses undertaken without any purpose of direct or indirect commercial advantage. Likewise, though independent scholars may sometimes earn royalties, this does not make their activities commercial. On a related point, with respect to the safe harbor, we agree that users should cease activity expeditiously if an owner emerges, but we hope the term can be clarified to allow users some time to actually verify the claims. Third, because orphan works will often, perhaps most often, be incorporated into other works of authorship, we would like to see language that more clearly defines the circumstances under which a user may avoid an injunction in cases of books, films, artworks, and websites. Fourth, we agree that users should credit authors when known, but disagree that users should credit copyright owners. Crediting authors is a question of scholarship. The latter, crediting copyright owners, is prone to error in the orphan context. We would hate to see additional confusion in the marketplace. Fifth and last, we oppose a sunset provision but would like to see a follow-up study by the Copyright Office within 7 years from passage of legislation. In closing, we recognize that orphan works legislation is a complicated undertaking which requires consideration of diverse constituencies. We appreciate the concerns of photographers in particular. Photography is important to the cultural sector. In past days, we have had conversations with several representatives of this important community, including David, in an effort to better understand their issues. We are quite confident that Congress can achieve a solution that is fair to all. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Palante. Let me say at the outset, before I direct my questions to any particular witness, that it's my impression that there is, with the possible exception of the photographers, general agreement on, say, 80 to 90% of the statutory language that has been offered by the Copyright Office. And we'll come back to photographers in a minute, but I saw you nod your head, Ms. Palante, and I assume that that's true, Mr. Adler, based upon your testimony as well. Mr. Sickle, I just want to thank you for the work that the Copyright Office has done. Believing to achieve agreement on 80 or 90% is a high level of accomplishment indeed, and so we appreciate all the effort that you put into it. In just a minute, I'm going to give you and Mr. Adler a chance to respond to some of the concerns that have been mentioned, but on the way there, Ms. Palante had a first question for you.
Yes.
There were a number of examples that you gave where you felt that the statutory language could be improved if language was more clearly defined. One example you gave was reasonable compensation. I'm not sure you can define reasonable compensation. We'll see if they can come up with it. I think there's too many possible objects involved. I think usually you use the standard that's reasonable at that particular time involving that particular, as I say, object, and I don't know that you're going to be able to more clearly define that. However, just the fact that you think that that's achievable and the language can be defined in such a way that it would be helpful to your membership, I think, is good. Also, as you know, there's already a fairly large carve-out for memberships such as yours, and they've got a long ways, I think, to try to accommodate some of your concerns. But I'm pleased to hear how optimistic you are about taking those last final steps. Mr. Trust, initially I was going to ask you to repeat all your concerns, but you did such a good job in your testimony. I think I'm going to skip directly to the response and then give you a chance to respond to the suggestions that Mr. Sigel and Mr. Adler might make. Gentlemen, I wanted to ask you if you would respond directly to the concerns by the photographers. I do think we're going to get there in the end, and I know that there's good faith negotiations that are ongoing, and I hope that they will be I hope you all be able to conclude those negotiations in the next week or two, and I'm sure you will be able to. But how do you propose addressing the concerns of the photographers, if you intend to address them at all? And as I understand it, there are some areas for compromise, and would you fairly quickly go into those areas too? And Mr. Sigel, we'll start with you and then go to Mr. Adler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the kind words. We're very pleased to have participated in this effort. I think with respect, part of our testimony was designed to make sure that we understand the different areas where the photographer's claims are relevant. Some of it is relevant to the Orphan Works proposal, and some of it is relevant to larger questions about enforcement of copyright generally. With respect to our proposal and the proposal to solve the Orphan Works problem, I think there are we've heard of two suggestions that might help alleviate the problem. The first would be some exception to the limitation on remedies for the situation where the user refuses to negotiate with a resurfacing owner in good faith. There's a question of how you define that and how you get that language right. But if in that situation where the owner resurfaces and asks for reasonable compensation and there's no good faith negotiation, perhaps at that point statutory damages and attorney's fees might become available for photographers who have timely registered their copyrights before the infringement occurred, so that the current status quo rules would still apply. The caveat on that kind of solution is that you don't want to recreate the Orphan Works problem again by creating uncertainty in the mind of the user that they might be hit with that liability. But I think we can come to some language that avoids that. The second suggestion, I think, which was mentioned in Mr. Trust's testimony, was the one about delaying the effective date of this any legislation for a short period of time, maybe a year, which I think would help both in terms of helping individual creators start developing systems so that they can be found and located, and also help develop some of the criteria for reasonably diligent search for both users and creators to understand what the scope of the Orphan Works designation would be. I think those are two suggestions to our proposal that would help address the problems.
Thank you, Mr. Sigel. Mr. Adler, do you have anything to add to that?
I don't want to say that I think the publisher...
Is your mic on? Okay.
The book publishing industry would support the recommendations made by Jewel just now with respect to both attorney's fees and perhaps a delayed implementation date, effective date for legislation. We're somewhat in conflict over this issue because, of course, photographs are precisely the kind of third-party copyrighted work that book publishers exhaust a great deal of effort and resources in having to license. I think that probably Mr. Truss would agree that book publishers generally are not a source of situations where these works are being published generally without attribution. For the most part, the works are licensed and they are attributed. So I think we'd have to think through what additional types of specific remedies we might be able to afford to them that would not have an adverse impact on the problem that already exists for book publishers with respect to photos that are often works.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Trust, the two remedies that you heard Mr. Sigel just mentioned, how do they sound to you?
Well, I think the exception to the remedies is certainly a step in the right direction, and we're grateful for that. We would like to pursue that, obviously. But please understand that it still requires the filing of a lawsuit in federal court.
Which, as you pointed out, not everybody can afford, and especially if the royalty is so small, it's hard to justify the cost.
Yes, sir. If you're a $30,000 a year photographer, $35,000 a year photographer, $300 is a lot of money.
Right.
$300 determines whether or not your daughter gets to play soccer, your son gets to play baseball. $300.
What about a small claims court?
Well, we're very much in favor of the idea of a small claims option for copyright issues. We think that solves an awful lot of the problem. As far as the waiting period, that is wait a year before, that is in our testimony, we're in favor of that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Stress. I just want to say that we've been joined by the gentleman from South Carolina, Mr. English, but I turned around and that individual has been replaced by the gentleman from California who has already been recognized today, and I appreciate his attendance, but we'll look forward to others returning as well. The gentlewoman from California, Ms. Lofgren, is recognized for her question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have, I think we've actually made some progress here, and I think that's it's not exactly what I thought it would be, but I think it is important, and probably workable, although I think we have a few more things yet to do. One of the questions I had, it's easier conceptually to think about this in the context of nonprofit uses, frankly, than for-profit uses. And yet, the issue of orphan works isn't just about nonprofit use. It's about the culture being able to take advantage of material that's essentially been abandoned. And that is important for all of us, and sometimes that use will be a commercial use. And I'm wondering, Mr. Adler, about your comment of reliance. If I can just explore that, I was just trying to think of a circumstance where you did a diligent search, couldn't find the copyright owner, so the publisher and the printer and the like rely on this, and then later the screenwriter relies on it. I mean, he's not in the chain that you've described. Why shouldn't the screenwriter be able to rely on that?
Well, Ms. Lofgren, I wouldn't disagree with you. I think that what we've asked for is that in particularly legislative history, more so than in statutory language, that we try to provide examples of these kinds of successive chains of interest. You can't call them chains of title because there's really
right.
no ownership interest that passes from hand to hand. But there clearly are certain types of business models where one party, with full expectation of the other, is going to be relying on, for example, the fact that when an author transfers copyright to a publisher, they will provide in the contract a warranty with respect to the fact that they're not infringing somebody else's copyright, and the publisher will rely on that. Now, in contracts, there will be indemnification agreements that deal with the situations where those warranties fail. We don't have the ability to, I think, impose that on this kind of a process, but therefore I think it would be helpful if we could define the kinds of chains of relationships that should qualify for reliance upon a previously done reasonably diligent mm-hmm. search in order to qualify for subsequent limitation on remedies.
I'm also thinking that when you get to reasonable damages, wouldn't it be important also in that to identify the risk taken by the individual who exploited what they thought was an orphaned work? For example, I think Justice Breyer, I don't know if he was right or not, identified that 95% of what's protected is not being exploited, and a lot of it has just been abandoned. Some of that is film, and to restore film is very expensive. And you want to be sure before you sink that kind of money into it that you're not going to end up holding the bag financially. So I think we need to make clear that reliance, good faith reliance after following the rules of trying to determine ownership is going to be protected in the financial. Does anybody disagree with that? The other question I have is really whether I understand the language is purposely general, and I value that. On the other hand, I'm having watched the patent courts go crazy with injunctive relief. I'm a little bit nervous about things that aren't actually in statute and whether we can rely safely on examples and legislative history, because the one thing we do want to have is some certainty in this system. That's one of the values of a registration proposal that this would replace in my bill, and I don't have a problem with that because there are other values with this, but if we don't have certainty in the system so that people know if they do 1, 2, 3, and 4 that they've got, they're safe, then we really won't have achieved our goal. Is there a thought about how we could have that certainty here?
That was an issue that came up a lot in the discussions at the roundtables and during our study, mostly in the question of what exactly does a reasonable search entail. And the conclusions, especially from the user-based community, was that it's better to take what uncertainty is also sometimes called flexibility, of having, because the situations of use and the types of works being used is so varied and can happen in
right.
different situations, you need that. What most people also agreed to do, though, was to start building voluntary criteria as to what a reasonably diligent search is on a sector-by-sector basis for the film industry or for the photography industry.
That makes sense.
And you develop those. At some point, you could formalize those in some way to make clear. The question of exactly how to do that is one that's still open, but I think the best place to start is with the development of those kinds of criteria, and then we can decide how the best...
And that would be something the Copyright Office could take the lead on.
We could take the lead on it. Most user groups, when we proposed having some sort of rulemaking authority to codify these things, were opposed to that, at least for now. So there's different mechanisms and vehicles by way that these criteria can be formalized. But at least we should start getting that out and getting that information out.
You could do it in a collaborative manner.
I think that's right. And we get that information out to both users and owners so they know a little bit more about what the scope of this this statute is.
I realize my time is over. I wonder if I could just say, I know Mr. Truss wants to say something, but I just want to thank Ms. Pallante for her comment about creators versus copyright owners. I hadn't really thought about that, but you're right. Michael Jackson isn't the Beatles, and we ought to make a distinction between the creator and the copyright holder. And I wonder if Mr. Truss had a final comment.
Without objection, the gentlewoman is recognized for an additional minute, and that minute will be used by Mr. Truss, I think, to respond to the question.
Congresswoman Lofgren, we certainly share some of your concern in that. We feel like unless there is some sort of, if not definition, some sort of samples or examples of what a reasonably diligent search would entail, if those don't exist, people of goodwill, good people who want to find the owners, won't know where to look in some cases, and people who frankly just want to get around the issue won't be, their feet won't be held to the fire, so to speak. And so we share your concern. We certainly think, if not in the legislation where it could be loosely defined, there needs to be quite a bit in the legislative history. We're in favor of having something even loose in the legislation just to help the process.
Finally, and I don't expect an answer now, Professor Lessig did raise the issue of the Berne Convention and that there might be problems relative to this proposal. I'm wondering if anybody has thought about that, and if you have thoughts after the hearing, if you could share them.
Thank you, Ms. Lofgren. The gentleman from California, Mr. Issa, is recognized for his questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I always wrestle with copyright law because trademark is kind of easy to understand. You have affirmative responsibility if you're to keep your trademark and you can own it in perpetuity. Patents are easy to understand because they're for a finite period, subject to renewal fees, and they're published and they're very clear and they're available in a single searchable data bank. And then you have this infinite amount of things. Some of them great creative work, some of them a snapshot, technically. And I'm not trying to put all your photographers with snapshots, but I'm a snapshot. So I have to look and say, are all my pieces anything other than whatever happened when the shutter opened, some of which look okay. In the series of reforms that are being proposed, I have one particular question of why something isn't there. And that is, you know, in trademarks, we have constructive abandonment law. It's very clear that if you don't take reasonable steps, your trademark becomes abandoned. Now, that's obviously something you can end up in federal court debating, because nobody ever thinks they abandoned it, even when they wrote that we're never going to make that product again and we hate that name. If somebody else starts using it, sometimes they change their mind. Is it possible that in fact we can put more material, of course we're not exactly talking about orphans, but we're talking about things that were intended to be orphans, can we in fact find language that puts more into the public domain more expeditiously by making it clear that, as Justice Breyer is paraphrased to have said, 95% of what is protected is in fact not in use? Mr. Siegel.
I think the main impediment to a system like a constructive abandonment in the trademark law is the international copyright system, which prohibits the imposition of formalities on the enjoyment and exercise of copyright. So to the extent, like in trademark law or in patent law, there's a requirement that you have to file something with a centralized office or do something, other formal requirement to maintain or enjoy the protection, that would run afoul of the international system, which is incorporated in the TRIPS agreement and the WTO system. So there are external constraints on the kinds of mechanisms that you might apply in to solve this problem. And that's a large part of our report is devoted to analyzing the various solutions that people have brought up and how they fit within that framework. part of the reason we chose the recommendation that we did, and I think the reason that the parties support it, is because it avoids any of those problems, because it's an ad hoc, case-by-case basis. It is somewhat more uncertain, but also more flexible, but it avoids any problems of suggesting that we're imposing a formality or other requirement that is prohibited by the international system. So that's, I think, the benefit of the proposal that we've put out, is that it's perfectly consistent with that system.
I appreciate that, but isn't that creative ambiguity erased when the court rules and precedent becomes there and it does the same thing as what legislation would have done? You say it's a case by case, but as we all know, case makes case law, which makes law.
If the courts were to impose a hard and fast requirement that someone would have to put notice on there in order to avoid being an orphan work or something like that, those situations might arise. But the question remains to be seen, and we'll have to see how the courts go with that. I would hope that the courts are mindful of the international obligations that we do live in under the copyright system.
Okay, and Mr. Trust, a question for you, particularly as to photographers. The fact that you're not going to get the normal statutory presumption, which is a valuable tool and does put people on the defensive when they simply take something and say, well, I didn't know who owned it. Would you feel more comfortable, and I know you've covered some of this in your testimony, but wouldn't you feel more comfortable if, in fact, we set some, and we talked about examples, but we created something that made it clear that there are standards, and if those standards of search are not reasonably conducted, then, in fact, statutory damages would apply? Is that something that you would feel that is worth our effort to continue looking for?
Well, I think, of course. I think all photographers would feel better knowing that before someone declared something that they created an orphan, that there was some standard that other people could look at and determine, based on that standard, whether they have actually conducted the search. You know, for some, they may say, well, I looked in the Yellow Pages. That was a search. You know what? It might be a search. In a specific case, that could actually be the search. But for the majority of works, I think photographers are nervous about that very fact. People saying, I looked in the phone book, didn't see the name that I thought might be there, therefore we used it because it was an orphan work. And if that's the case, the exact example that you're talking about will encourage people to participate more fully in the search process and conducting reasonably diligent searches.
Can I suggest, Mr. Chairman's indulgence, if in fact during a period of time somebody else found you and paid you a royalty, would that be sufficient, in your opinion, for us to say that should be codified as, if somebody else could find you and somebody else negotiated and somebody else paid, then in fact there should be some peril that these eight people are finding you and paying, and this one says he couldn't find you and thus says sorry?
Clearly, yes. We think that there should be some peril if the others manage to find a photographer and then one claimed to have conducted a diligent search and couldn't find them. You know, the reason we say this is because active photographers are not that hard to find. We're talking about, in this discussion, we're talking about works that have been created some time ago. Existing photographers who are in business, will require little more than a Google search to find.
Thank you for using my example.
To find them. And so it won't take much to find active photographers. They're not hiding. These are active businesses. They want people to find them. They're not trying to keep themselves concealed. The issue really is completely around works that were created some time back, and those photographers may or may not still be in business.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for letting me make my point.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Isaac. Let me observe that I think there have been good questions today and unusually enlightened answers, and this has been very helpful to me and I'm sure to others as well. Also, let me emphasize that I do hope that you all will come to an agreement on specific language that will help refine some of the terms that Mr. Adder mentioned and Ms. Palante mentioned and Mr. Trust is worried about. And is it reasonable to feel that by the last week of this month you could come to some kind of a general agreement on the statutory language and have reached accommodations? Mr. Siegel, does that sound like a possibility to you?
That certainly sounds like a possibility to us. Most of the discussions have been taking place between the private sector representatives.
Right.
We've been informed of them, and we've started to participate in them. I think that sounds reasonable from the Copyright Office's perspective.
By the end of March. Mr. Adler, does that sound reasonable to you?
There are other stakeholders who are, of course, not necessarily represented by us, but we have begun conversations with them, and we would hope to be able to continue the dialogue toward that end.
And toward the end of the month. And Ms. Palante?
Yes, absolutely. The cultural sector is nothing if not reasonable.
Okay. So you think by the end of the month is a reasonable amount of time?
Absolutely.
Okay, Mr. Trust, I've obviously tried to box you in here.
I hadn't noticed.
What do you think?
I would echo the comments of Mr. Adler. There are other stakeholders here that who we don't represent, but we know that
there's lots of them. But still,
We certainly feel like we can work with everyone to help pull them together and
by the end of the month
make substantial progress. Yeah, and do it by the end of the month.
Great,
absolutely.
Thank you all. We look forward to your work product, and we stand adjourned.
Thank you.